And good afternoon, good afternoon, good afternoon. It is a Tuesday, March the 7th, 2017. 1:11 coming up on 1:12 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. You're tuned into the Now program. I am Scott Spears. And don't forget, tonight, coming up at the warehouse over on Center Street, it is a free event. It is Science Cafe. Tonight, the discussion will be led by Dr. R. Kelly Garrett, Associate Professor of the School of Communication at The Ohio State University. Kicks off at 6 p.m. If you do want to order dinner, you should arrive by 5 p.m., but the subject is fake news, things, how we can combat that, and that's something I'm very interested in, and I'm very happy to be joined via telephone by the speaker tonight, Dr. R. Kelly Garrett. Dr. Garrett, glad we can continue our conversation here. How do we combat the fake news epidemic? Even though it might appeal to our own bias, how do we know if it's real or fake?
So, all right. There are actually a couple questions there. I'm going to start with your second one first. That is, how do we spot fake news? And my first response would be that it's actually not that hard to find, to do some research to determine whether news is well-sourced or not. There are a lot of online resources available today that allow you to cross-check and see, is this story picked up in multiple outlets, and are they well supported by investigative journalists, by people who are clear and transparent about their methods, about their sources? So there are organizations like Snopes, which has been dealing with rumors and urban legends and conspiracy theories circulating online, not just about politics, for quite a long time now. And then there are the more politically oriented fact-checking sites like FactCheck and PolitiFact and the Washington Post's Fact Checker. You can also compare across different outlets. You know, if a news story is only showing up on one site or on a network of very closely related sites, if you're seeing it only in the sites that have a lot of things in common, they tend to embrace a particular political ideology, they tend to promote a particular candidate, and if it tends to be that they're always promoting the same candidates, the same ideology as one another, and they're the only ones who are talking about a story, that's a good sign that this isn't necessarily right. In some cases, some of these political hoaxes can be identified as easily as just going and looking at the site where the story showed up. For example, when stuff on Paul Horner's abc.co.au shows up, you know, if people were actually to click through to the About This Site page, it's pretty obvious from what he's written there that this is not related to the ABC News site that we know in the U.S. The question, I think, in some ways, of how you spot or identify fake news is almost, it's potentially a bit misleading, because it seems to imply that the problem is that people haven't heard the real news, that somehow they've been duped into believing the fake news because they've been unaware, they've been shielded from more accurate information. And that is actually not, it's often not the case. There are some cases where people are simply unaware of the evidence out there, but in many instances, people know what the fact-checkers, what the journalists and investigators or scientists have concluded about a topic, and they've simply chosen to reject it. So millions of Americans who knew what the FBI concluded about Hillary Clinton's handling of classified emails said that they knew better than the FBI. You know, the FBI, they knew the FBI did not believe that pressing charges was appropriate, but many Americans who knew that also said, but I think that charges should be pressed. Similarly, you see patterns like this on a host of issues. I've looked at this particular question both in 2012 during that election cycle and again in 2016. It's not unique to this campaign season. So then how do you, perhaps the bigger question then is, well, what do you do about that? If it's not a matter of people being unaware that there is evidence that contradicts what they're predisposed to believe, how do we get to the point where people understand and accept the evidence that's out there? And here I think there are a couple kinds of answers. One is that as Americans, we have a really interesting and important challenge ahead of us. I think that most Americans would agree that there is real value in being able to tell the difference between what is true and what is not. I don't think that anyone feels good about having to throw up their hands, as I mentioned before, and say, oh, I just can't know. Well, that's a choice. That's something we can do something about. We aren't powerless in being able to have some say over being able to decide what's true or not. We can expect a certain degree of transparency, but we need to have a conversation as a society about what constitutes the kinds of evidence that we are willing to trust. What does it mean for something to be shown to be true? Because we need to move away from the freeness with which we embrace claims that make us feel good or make our candidates look good, and we need to be more prepared to say, all right, if someone investigates and reaches this conclusion or finds evidence of this, then we have to reject one belief. If they find evidence of that, then we have to accept that belief. This is no small task because there is a lot of controversy over what constitutes good journalism. How do you know whether you can trust the investigation done by a journalist? What if that journalist is operating with a political agenda? Those are valid questions, important questions, but the answer cannot be that we simply only trust the journalists who side with us. The answer has to be instead that we look for certain practices, certain ways that journalists do their job that allow us to evaluate whether the conclusions they reach are trustworthy or not.
You know, the interesting thing is, though, I do think people hear the real story. I don't think it's that they want to believe the other thing. I think it's that they do believe the other thing. I think that when Hillary Clinton, for example, the example you brought up, when Hillary Clinton, when Director Comey of the FBI said he was not, no prosecutor would take this case against Hillary Clinton, that she was extremely careless, but nobody would take that case. Now, everybody heard that. Everybody heard that. It was on every news story, every newspaper. You could not help but hear that. But then websites like Breitbart and websites, conservative websites, sort of buried her in their own stories. But I think it's that people heard that, but they think the New York Times, which has legitimate reporters, Washington Post, legitimate reporters, CNN, legitimate reporters, NBC, the list goes on and on, but I think they look at them and say they're lying and that Breitbart is true. I don't think it's, well, this just fits my ideology. I don't think Fox would be the number one cable news network, in parenthesis, if people thought it was fake. I don't think that Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity would be the number one radio programs if people thought what they were saying was fake. I think that they think that. I don't think it fits their, I think in the end it fits their ideology. But I think they are journalists. Bill O'Reilly's a journalist. Anderson Cooper is not.
I agree. We have to be careful not to imply that people hold beliefs simply because they want them to be true. That's not at all what I'm trying to suggest. You're, I think, absolutely correct that people's beliefs are sometimes they are the result of, and sometimes they are only justified by, their faith in these different news organizations. They put trust in different groups. And there's sense to that, right? We have to balance the risk of being naive, taken advantage of, fooled, against the risk of being overly cynical or distrustful of things that we really ought to trust. Now, when I suggest that we should agree ahead of time on the practices that make for good journalism, this doesn't mean that we should predetermine that certain outlets are the trustworthy ones and others aren't. I'm saying it's the other way around. We need to assess, well, what makes good journalism? And then we can use that to decide which coverage is trustworthy. It's very difficult when individuals feel connected to the news organizations, the credibility of the news organization, as you say, that people who feel highly invested in Fox News, it's in part because they feel like this is the credible news organization. This is the one that they can trust. But we need to move beyond saying, well, I trust it because it's the one that I know is trustworthy, right? There is a sort of circular logic we often fall back on. We know which organizations we trust because our friends tell us that's what they trust, or because that's the organization we've always used. There are actually journalistic best practices which might help us to better assess what we should trust and what we shouldn't.
You know what's interesting? If I am the common consumer of news, and I'm not doing a news program or all that invested, here's what happens today that I think's a little scary. It happened with this wiretap story over the weekend. Now, Thursday, conservative talk show host Mark Levin on the radio ran that story. And then on Friday, Breitbart, the conservative, I think, website, ran that story. So then by the time the president tweets it out on Saturday morning, which we assume he got it from one of those two sources, because the first time anybody had ever heard of it, now it's out there. So now CNN, Fox News, MSNBC, everybody's reporting on it because the president did it. But if you would go and search that in Google to say, well, are any other websites reporting on this? Is it out there? It is, because Mark Levin had reported on it, Breitbart had reported on it long before the president did. So if you believe Breitbart, and a lot of people do, they're in the White House briefings now when CNN, in the gaggles when CNN and the New York Times are not. If you believe them, if you believe Mark Levin, it is everywhere on the internet. So is it a real story?
Yeah, I mean, this is a very troubling situation that we are facing right now, where organizations that have historically been marginalized because of their journalistic practices are now being given a much higher profile. I didn't anticipate seeing a news organization like InfoWars, which has a long history of embracing conspiracy theories, being to the level that it is today.
So I guess one of the bigger questions is, because really, this president did that. I don't remember any other president, Republican or Democrat, ever inviting groups like InfoWars and Breitbart into White House briefings. Now, that being said, so he has legitimized these groups in a certain way. Why did he do that? And what does it do to journalism?
So why the president makes the choices that he does is tremendously difficult question to answer, especially for a social scientist like me. I need empirical evidence if I want to make a claim, and I don't have empirical evidence about the president's intentions, not on this topic. So it's difficult to speculate. I can talk about what the possible consequences are. I think that there is real risk of legitimizing organizations that have often not taken themselves, have not taken their journalistic responsibilities particularly seriously. I think that there is, that it is irresponsible to embrace conspiracy theories, to promote complex stories of nefarious action taken on by secret actors when you have no ability to provide evidence, and the claims themselves are, they can't be falsified. There is no evidence that someone could provide that would ever lead you to conclude, oh, well, I guess I was wrong. Those kinds of stories have been advanced by some of these news organizations, and to reward those organizations, to legitimize them, as you say, I think is dangerous. I think that it is consequential for Democrats and Republicans alike, because at some point, all politicians face the reality that they are behind something that the public doesn't like, and that they're behind it because the evidence, because the real world demands that position of them. And in an environment where citizens are accustomed to only trusting specific political actors, so only trusting the president because he says that all the media are liars, or trusting the president and a select group of news organizations that have systematically endorsed his positions, that's very difficult because it means that people who, if the president ever wanted to advance an agenda that his constituents weren't pleased with, or that the media organizations that he has endorsed weren't pleased with, who is supposed to be, how does he justify that? What evidence does he use? If the only source of evidence is evidence that he deems trustworthy, and if he's saying something that people don't like, there is a real risk that when trust is based on favorability, based on your liking of someone, so I trust the president because I think that he has good ideas and because he's doing things that I agree with, well, the moment he says something that you don't agree with or that you are unhappy about, if he tries to motivate his decision by pointing to evidence, there is, I think, some risk that people will, that distrust will spill over, right? We're seeing the breakdown of society-wide trust in the institutions that create knowledge, say, for instance, nonpartisan think tanks and scientists and a variety of other kinds of data, survey data, and so forth, and seeing breakdown in the trust in organizations that are responsible for disseminating these kinds of information, news organizations, it creates a very troubling world where too many individuals feel like they are either only able to trust their own instincts, or they're only able to trust a select group of sources.
Here's something that I think is important, because as a political scientist, you base your opinions and thoughts and facts on facts. That being said, Breitbart's a big one, because you have the former editor working in the White House, and they now have been made part of the White House pool. Are they a legitimate, nonpartisan news organization?
I don't believe that Breitbart would consider itself nonpartisan. I think that Breitbart would assert that it is a news organization, but that it has a responsibility to a particular political worldview. I think that my impression is that Breitbart wears that as a badge of honor. Its conservatism is something of which the editors and writers of Breitbart are proud.
That
is, you know, Breitbart has run stories that don't deserve the label of news or journalism. Some of the stories are pretty poorly sourced. Some of it is opinion journalism that isn't always as clear about its status as opinion journalism as it needs to be. And they've run some really awful things that I don't really know how they would justify.
You know, I'll tell you something that's interesting. Where I see a lot of things that I consider fake are obviously Facebook. When I'm scrolling through in the morning, you see a lot of bizarre stories. And what I have done, and always have done, is I look at the very bottom in the left-hand corner. You will see where that story came from, what website. Now, that being said, what are some websites? Nobody gets it right 100% of the time. But if I see that it came from this website, that I'm pretty sure this story has probably been checked out by people with journalistic integrity, and that it's been run through by more than one person, and that it wasn't just written for a political ideology, and that facts have been checked. What are some good sites to look for?
Well, there are a whole host of news organizations that very explicitly attempt to be nonpartisan, and these include the major newspapers, including their online presence. So, you know, the USA Today and the Washington Post and the New York Times, and you've got some international papers that also try and provide coverage. You've got the news organizations that have the television affiliation, so the nightly news programs, NBC, ABC, CBS. You've got news organizations like NPR, which has a radio presence but also has an online presence. And then there are things like Politico. And I've already mentioned the fact-checking sites that are out there. These are among the most widely read news organizations. And they also, the ones that I've named, they have an established track record of doing good journalism.
Now, that being said, something that's interesting. If you would go to some people, I guarantee you this afternoon, fair-minded people, I think, and I would say, New York Times, Washington Post, NBC, ABC, and CBS are good, honest, news, unbiased websites and outlets most of the time, conservative people are going to disagree.
Well, let's add to the list the Wall Street Journal.
Wall Street Journal.
The Weekly Standard.
Sure.
I think the National Review. I think there are no shortage of outlets. As I said, these are outlets that, in their mission, most of them aim to be nonpartisan. Now, National Review, perhaps not quite so much. But most of them explicitly embrace their nonpartisan, their non-ideological approach, although it is undeniable that the opinion page of the New York Times is a whole lot more liberal than the opinion page of the Wall Street Journal. The positions endorsed by the editorial board of those two papers diverge on most counts.
Here's a good example. The front page of the New York Times and the Post. Well, let's choose the Times here. The Times ran on the front page, not the editorial page, the story about Trump and the Russians and Sessions. Oh, that was the Post. I think that the Post had the Sessions story first last week. Okay. That being said, not on the editorial page, a lot of people, including the president, but just people who like him and support him, the next day said, that's not a real story. That's not true. Do you think it makes the front page of the Washington Post if it's not true?
Right. I think that we started this conversation around this question of fake news and what is it, and I think that this is perhaps the most troubling shift that we've witnessed in just the last 3 or 4 months, where there was a fake news was a term that was reserved for hoaxes and things that had no evidence, and now it is widely used as a label for any news organization or any news story that you think that reflects poorly on something, on a candidate that you support, or an elected official that you support, or an issue that you believe in. Now, this is where my recommendation before, my concern that we are facing a crisis about what we as a society deem as trustworthy and believable. I think that it is troubling that we aren't willing to say, okay, so there is one set of evidence out there, and we all agree about the basic lay of the land. These are the things that we know, these are the things that we don't, and there's plenty of room for disagreement about interpretation without diving into calling one another liars. And I'm afraid that that the move to quickly label things like the stories in the Washington Post as not real news, it's troubling.
There are two questions before I let you go that I want to delve into here, because television news stations, the proliferation of those stations, are interesting, because all three major television 24-hour news networks, CNN, MSNBC, and Fox News, all claim to be the news. They'll say they have editorial people, but they claim to be news channels, and people watch them all day long. I see them in doctor's offices and everywhere. That being said, to you, based on your evidence, are any of those channels the news? And if none of them are the news all of the time, which is the most accurate?
So I'm not in a position to say which is the most accurate, but I can say a few things. I think that I am not convinced that any of these cable news channels are news all the time. Yes, they are they're being transmitted over the cable networks 24/7. Yes, they're always on, but not all of their content is news. All of these organizations, CNN, MSNBC, and Fox, they all have some content that is their hard news content, and some that is their opinion stuff. And the trick is that as consumers, we don't generally have a little switch that says, okay, this is the hard news and this is the opinion stuff. If you tune to one of these channels, so you turn on Fox in the morning and you turn on Fox at night, and you tend to think of, well, I'm watching the news because I'm watching a channel called Fox News. And the same could be said of MSNBC or CNN. But the truth is, they're not all equally focused reporting the facts, and some of the programs are very much oriented towards expressing a political opinion. So that would be the first distinction. You're asking, well, which one has the most news? Well, if you want to be watching the news, if you want to be getting the news, focus on the programs that are news programs, not the ones that are offering entertainment mixed with news, and not the ones that are offering to provide you a particular political pundit's take on the news of the days. Those things are different. I'm not saying they're bad, but they are different than the hard news content. When you ask about the value of these different news outlets, There have been a number of polls over the last 10 years that have shown that the people who consume, who rely on different outlets, have different levels of political knowledge, different levels of accuracy about political information. And it is true that Fox viewers have done worse on some of those metrics in some of those studies. But again, it's difficult to know where that's coming from. It could be that people are watching the opinion content more than they're watching the news content. It could be that the people who are attracted to the programming happen to be less knowledgeable. This is a really complicated problem, and it's dangerous, I think, to label an outlet as... it's very challenging. It's dangerous to label an outlet as not the news, as unreliable news, but it's also dangerous to say all news is equal. We don't want to create a world in which there is false balance.
Right.
So the fact that viewers of Fox News have regularly been found to answer questions about the political world incorrectly more often than people who get their news from other sources suggests that there may be a problem there. And I would venture a guess that we would find similar trends in these more partisan outlets. In fact, in my own work, I find that people who use the explicitly partisan outlets, the outlets that label themselves as conservative or as liberal, these individuals do consistently more poorly on questions about the accuracy of their beliefs. And in these cases, I even find that they may very well know what the facts are. So they may, for example, know what investigators found in Iraq after the U.S.-led invasion. That is, there were no weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. Individuals who use conservative outlets are more likely to say, despite knowing what the investigators found, to say, well, I think that there were. And it actually cuts both ways. Individuals who rely on liberal media, and back in 2012, those who relied on liberal media but knew that Romney was not involved with Bain Capital when Bain Capital was busy outsourcing jobs, they said, well, sure, we know what the fact checkers have said about that, but liberal news users were more likely to disagree, to say, I think that he was involved in Bain. I think he was responsible for that outsourcing, despite what the fact checkers say. So, yes, partisan news, media that specifically advances a political agenda, has consequences. It produces changes in what people believe, and it makes beliefs less accurate in many instances.
The interesting thing is much like the New York Times, as you said earlier on, the editorial page obviously is more liberal. But the other pages are usually accurate news pages. When it comes to these television stations, when you look across the board, I would say that by the ratings, which is what they live and die by, the most popular show on Fox is Bill O'Reilly. The most popular show on MSNBC, I think right now, is Rachel Maddow. And the most popular show on CNN is Anderson Cooper, I believe. Now, if you were going to go somewhere, if you were a news consumer, and those are your choices, are any of those shows, for the most part, they all have pundits on them, but by the host themselves, are any of those shows more likely to be the news than the other?
So I think that both on the liberal and the conservative end, so Maddow and Riley, they both tend to be quite explicit about their interpretation of the political news of the day. Now, I'm not prepared to say that Anderson Cooper is reporting the news straight, and actually I think I would prefer not to take your question at face value. I would say, look, if you're interested in the news, there are lots of really useful ways to get it. You can look at something like a news aggregation service, a place that collects news from lots of different sources, and then if you want to see what the partisans have to say, well, look at what they have to say on both sides. So go to news.google.com or Yahoo's news site or Memorandum or any of these sites that try and pull up the sort of pressing issues of the day and show you a range of views on those stories. And take a look at what the different sides have to say. I'm not saying that you're going to be convinced when you're looking at the news of an outlet that you are inherently distrustful of. So, you know, conservatives reading the New York Times article aren't going to immediately say, oh, well, now I see what's true. I know what's going on now that New York Times has told me the truth about the world. But there is value in carefully in looking at this content and asking questions that aren't about the conclusions but are about the methods. Can I tell what information the journalist used to arrive at this conclusion? Can I tell who the journalist talked to? Can I find pieces of evidence that show up in the same form across various outlets? Because if outlets that draw different conclusions are starting from the same basic facts, that's a good sign, right? That tells you something important about the facts that they're starting from.
Well, this
and then you can begin to use those commonly agreed on facts to form your own judgment.
And this leads into our final question, and I appreciate the time, and I do want to let everybody know again that Dr. R. Kelly Garrett, who we're speaking with, the Associate Professor of the School of Communication at The Ohio State University, will be at the Warehouse tonight, 6 p.m. over on Center Street here in Marion Science Cafe. That is free to the public. If you want dinner, arrive at 5 p.m. The topic will be news and fake news as one of those topics. Here's something that has popped up, and I've noticed this. In this current administration, really, I didn't notice it so much in the last one or the one before that. But we'll take one of our similar points again. The Washington Post news story about Attorney General Sessions lying under oath, or meeting with Russians. Let's say meeting with Russians. Okay. Now, if you go on and report that now, and you report the facts, you just report the Washington Post story and the findings, or what the president said over the weekend about Obama and wiretappings. Now, is that being critical of the president, or is that just reporting the news? Because people will say that that story in and of itself is negative, and the new tagline is, just get out of the way and let the president do his job. Stop with that stuff.
Right, but the news has never been about getting out of the way and letting the president do his job. That's never been the role of the news. The news journalists' charge is to investigate and to provide information to a public that is otherwise too busy and too involved with other things in their daily lives to do this work on their own. Right?
But what makes you
and I are probably not going to be doing this kind of investigation on our own.
Right.
But it matters. But it's important information to have.
But the problem is when you do those stories, because the campaign's over. So when you do those stories, because let me put it to you this way, because this is what I noticed from being on air. Last election, Donald Trump controlled the media cycle. So if you turned to the Washington Post or the New York Times, even though you got a true story, I would imagine 80% of the time it was about Donald Trump. Now, that being said, if you're reporting those stories, are you a biased news outlet?
Right. So I take your point, and you're absolutely right. There's been some very careful empirical work documenting the amount of basically free coverage that then candidate Trump got by virtue of his use of Twitter and the kinds of campaign events that he created and his sort of shocking behavior.
Yeah. So it by just reporting on Donald Trump every day, as long as it's true, as long as you have the facts, does that make you biased?
Well, I'm certainly not going to to concede that reporting facts is going to make you biased.
I'm
not sure exactly what you're getting at.
No, that's a big question. That, for example, if you turn on Rush Limbaugh right now, who's on opposite us, you know that he's not always reporting in facts, and that probably is a biased viewpoint. Now, if you would tune into us on a current events day, we might report the story on Donald Trump, but that would be called bias because we're not reporting the good things and we're reporting the bad things. But it's just there are more bad things, it seems, by and large, because of the Twitter and the way things go. Like last week, for example, last week we reported on a good speech. Then you had the thing with Attorney General Sessions. Then you had the tweet about Obama. Now, people would call that a bias Newsweek because there was more negative than positive.
Right. Okay. So I think I follow your question. My view is that politicians, by and large, need to have a thick skin, as do the supporters of politicians who are in office, because they are the politicians are always going to be a target. They're always going to be the topic of conversation. They're what the news media talk about because they're the ones who are making policy decisions. And policy decisions is a really important part of what journalists cover. And it is undoubtedly true that much of the news that you're going to hear about anyone in office is going to include information that is that reflects negatively on that politician, either because for some people they disagree with the position that the politician has endorsed, or because there has been some scandal associated with the politician or with someone associated with the politician. This is what makes the news. This has always been the case. I think that you will find the coverage of candidates and issues is bad news does tend to lead.
I think no truer statement has ever been said. Dr. R. Kelly Garrett, tonight at the Warehouse, 6 p.m., for the Free Science Cafe, Associate Professor of the School of Communication at Ohio State. What a fascinating conversation it's been. Thank you so much, and I hope you come back in the future, and I hope tonight is a great success.
Right. Terrific. Thanks so much for having me on.
Thank you. Bye-bye. And again, that was a lot of fun. Telephone lines are open now. We've got about 5-6 minutes left here if there's something you'd like to comment on. 740-383-9944. That's 740-383-9944. Again, you were listening to Dr. R. Kelly Garrett, Associate Professor of Communications at The Ohio State University. He will be at the Warehouse on Center Street tonight at 6 p.m., open and free to the public. The topic is fake news. So, very interesting stuff there. Now, we do have our trivia questions out, and again, the phone lines are open if you'd like to comment about anything that was said there, 740-383-9944. The trivia questions, you can win a To Die For cupcake, or you can win 2 free bowling games to Buckeye Lanes for a group of 4. The big Crosley company that owned WLW Radio, WLWC Television, WLWI, WLWD, what corporation did they sell out to in the 1960s that pretty well dismantled the legendary Crosley Company? Another question we have here. Bill Nimmo was Johnny Carson's first announcer on Who Do You Trust, later replaced by Ed McMahon. Bill Nimmo left the show to go do another big role in television. Bill Nimmo was a WLW in Cincinnati, Ohio alum. What big show did he go do and leave Johnny Carson to go do, which opened up the door for Ed McMahon? Another question. Flippo the Clown, Columbus, Ohio institution, ended his show in a special way every day. How did he do that? Casper the Clown ended his show in a special way every day. How did he do that? And Dorothy Fulltime out of Cleveland, Ohio, interviewed a big world leader that few people had the interest or ability to interview. Who was that? Caller, go ahead.
I want to tell you how Filippo ended his show.
Oh, go ahead.
Love you. Keep smiling. And don't fight.
You got it. Would you like a to-die-for cupcake, or would you like the bowling games?
No, I'll just keep listening and enjoying your questions.
Well, hey, thank you so much for getting that. We've had that one out there for a while.
I know.
Thank you.
Goodbye.
Well, you're right. Keep smiling and don't fight. That was how Flippo ended his show. Again, phone lines are open, 740-383-9944. That's 740-383-9944. Answers to any of the trivia questions or comments on anything we talked about today on the program. So now we know how Flippo ended his show. Now, how did Casper the Camel end his show? He was on WSYX, which back then was WTVN, Channel 6 in Columbus, Ohio, during the 1950s, and he also used to end his show in a very special way. How did he do that? 740-383-9944. And Dorothy Fulltime, the first lady to anchor a television broadcast, a news broadcast between Chicago and New York, out of Cleveland, Ohio, interviewed a major world leader that very few people got to interview. Who did Dorothy Fulltime interview? 740-383-9944, and you can get a to-die-for cupcake, you can get two free bowling games for a group of four to Buckeye Lanes, or you can just get the great fact that you answered the question today, just like the lady who just called in and got the Flippo the Clown question finally off the table. But again, I can't believe we haven't got this one yet. Who did the Crosley Corporation sell out to? Nobody remembers who the giant Crosley Corporation sold out to. Sold all their television stations, sold their radio station, sold everything out to this company, which eventually dismantled their operation. Who did they sell out to? 740-383-944. Give us a ring and we will get you up on the air. Still about a minute left in the program, or if you have any comments on the program today, we want to thank Senator Sherrod Brown for being on earlier on to discuss the health care plan and what's going on in Washington. And we thank Professor Dr. R. Kelly Garrett, Associate Professor of the School of Communication at The Ohio State University, who tonight will be at the Warehouse on Center Street at 6 p.m. for the Science Cafe. That is free and open to the public, March the 7th, 6 p.m. If you'd like dinner, arrive by 5 p.m., but if you don't want any dinner, arrive by 6, and it's absolutely free, and the conversation tonight will be on fake news. How interesting. And tomorrow, we'll be back with more programmings. Tomorrow's broadcast day starts with the Fayey Bank Charlie Evers Show, 10:15 a.m. till 12 noon. And then this show will follow 12:15 to 2 p.m. tomorrow. And much more programming on WWGH Radio throughout the day, so stay tuned. But for this day, this is Scott Spears heading for the dugout.
WWGH Radio, LP 107.1 FM, Marion, Ohio.